welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, an editor-in-chief of iFormRx, and today we're going to be talking about the use of combination therapy, specifically the use of antiplatelet plus an anticoagulant in patients with stable coronary artery disease. Now, some years ago in the late 1990s, there was strong interest in using warfarin plus aspirin in patients to reduce the risk of recurrent cardiovascular events following an MI or stroke. And while warfarin plus aspirin was slightly better than aspirin alone, it also resulted in very significant increases in major bleeding. Thus, today, we generally avoid the combination of warfarin and aspirin unless there's a compelling indication to use them together. However, the anticoagulant landscape is quite different today, and we've had several direct oral anticoagulants, known collectively as DOACs, at our disposal that appear to have a slightly better margin of safety in terms of major bleeding. Perhaps combining a DOAC with an antiplatelet agent like aspirin or clopidogrel might further reduce the risk of recurrent cardiovascular events, but not substantially increase the risk of bleeding. Well, joining me today to discuss the recently published COMPASS trial are Candace Bryant, Joy Hoffman, and Sean McFarlane from the Tennessee Valley VA Healthcare System in Central Tennessee. Dr. Bryant and Dr. Hoffman are PGY2 ambulatory care pharmacy practice residents, and Dr. McFarlane recently joined the National Clinical Pharmacy Practice Office. Candace, Joy, Sean, welcome to the iFormRx podcast.
Thanks for having us, Stuart. We're excited to be here.
Thanks, Stuart. We're excited to talk about the COMPASS trial.
Looking forward to discussing this and what we can get out of it.
Before we get started, I want you to imagine you're seeing KW, a 69-year-old veteran, for a routine follow-up visit. And as you review his chart, you note that KW had an MI about 8 years ago and had multiple stents placed at that time. In addition to coronary artery disease, he also has a history of high blood pressure, dyslipidemia, abnormal fasting glucose, and he's obese. He currently takes low-dose aspirin, lisinopril plus hydrochlorothiazide, amlodipine, and simvastatin. You see that he was referred to an exercise and weight loss program last year, and he's actually lost 10 pounds. His current weight is 216 pounds, and his BMI is 31.2. His blood pressure today is 124 over 72, and he has a fasting lipid profile drawn this morning, but the results are still pending. However, 6 months ago, his LDL was 45, his HDL was 38, and his triglycerides was 112 at that time. So before we get into the specifics of the COMPASS trial, which you critically examined in your commentary, can you tell us a little bit more about some of the things that are going on in your mind as I tell you about this case? What additional information might you want to collect and assess during the encounter? And are there any additional treatment options you consider at this point?
So looking at the case initially, this patient appears to have a pretty extensive cardiac history. He's had a MI about 8 years ago, also has multiple cardiac risk factors as well. If we divide up these disease states and kind of look at those one by one, we can see he's on a statin and low-dose aspirin as well for secondary prevention of cardiovascular disease. He's also on a reasonable blood pressure regimen. He's taken an ACE inhibitor, which evidence has shown to reduce cardiovascular mortality, so that's beneficial to see in this patient as well. The abnormal fasting glucose does grab my attention, and I'd want to take a deeper dive into that. As we know, diabetes can, again, be a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. Something else to consider with this gentleman being a veteran is looking at his tobacco use. So is he a smoker? That's something else to talk about with the patient. While he has multiple risk factors, they do appear to be very well controlled. He has an at-goal blood pressure, even with the most recent AACC guidelines being released. His lipid panel appears to be well controlled as well. Some things to consider, however, would be transitioning his statin therapy to a high-intensity statin, since he does have a history of an MI before. So looking at atorvastatin or rosuvastatin in this patient versus simvastatin. You could also consider initiating a beta blocker, given he is post-MI as well. However, there is limited data available for use beyond 3 years, but still, this is a reasonable consideration, given he has stable CAD and hypertension as well. We could also look at non-pharmacological measures, including weight loss, as the patient appears that he was in an exercise weight loss program before and had some benefit there, and with his current BMI is still considered to be obese. So that's another recommendation that we could make. So ultimately, looking at his statin therapy, transitioning that to a high-intensity statin, as well as potentially initiating a beta blocker is reasonable, and then again, focusing on non-pharmacological measures, getting him back into the exercise weight loss program or looking at smoking cessation therapy as well. So those are kind of the things running through my mind looking at this patient case.
So in the commentary you wrote for iFormRx entitled Rivaroxaban, Aspirin, or Both in Stable Cardiovascular Disease, you talk about the potential role of anticoagulation plus antiplatelet therapy to prevent recurrent cardiovascular events. So can you briefly tell us about some of the previous evidence, the data prior to the COMPASS trial being published?
So as mentioned in your introduction, there have been studies looking at the combination of anticoagulation and antiplatelet therapy in patients with stable cardiovascular disease. So there are a few trials looking at one of our oldest oral anticoagulants, warfarin, in addition to aspirin, low dose, and we can touch on those briefly. So there were about 4 major trials that looked at the combination of warfarin in addition to aspirin. The arms of these 4 major trials looked at a variation of warfarin monotherapy, aspirin monotherapy, and then the combination of warfarin plus aspirin. The primary endpoints that were considered in these trials looked at a variation of cardiovascular death, MI, and stroke. And then one trial also looked at all-cause mortality. And then, as expected, the major safety endpoint that was assessed was bleeding. When we look at the efficacy that was shown in these trials, the evidence is really split. So 2 of the trials that looked at a primary endpoint of cardiovascular death, MI, and stroke actually did show a statistically significant reduction and a benefit in the efficacy endpoints with the combination of warfarin plus aspirin. But a 3rd trial that looked at these same outcomes did not find a benefit with warfarin plus aspirin, and then a trial looking at all-cause mortality did not find benefit either. There was one common theme amongst all these trials, and that was increased risk of bleeding. And that was found to be as high as 2- to 4-fold increase in bleed risk. Therefore, this is why warfarin in combination with aspirin has not been used in preventing cardiovascular events for patients with stable CAD.
And transitioning over to current evidence for the use of DOACs as a secondary prevention strategy, we first have the APPRAISE trial, which was published in 2011 and evaluated apixaban versus placebo along with aspirin or dual antiplatelet therapy post-ACS and high-risk patients. The regimen of apixaban 5 milligrams twice daily plus aspirin or dual antiplatelet therapy did not reduce recurrent ischemic events and actually increased fatal bleeding and intracranial hemorrhage. Because of this, the trial was ultimately terminated early due to evidence of harm. Next, we have the ATLAS trial, which included over 15,000 patients. In this case, authors looked to define the benefit of rivaroxaban 2.5 milligrams and 5 milligrams twice daily plus standard dual antiplatelet therapy in patients with recent ACS, meaning within 7 days. Over a mean follow-up period of about 13 months, both doses of rivaroxaban decreased a composite outcome of cardiovascular mortality, MI, and stroke. They also noted that stent thrombosis was also reduced. Low-dose rivaroxaban reduced both cardiovascular mortality and all-cause mortality, but this was not observed with the higher dose. Overall, the benefits of rivaroxaban were offset by an increased rate of non-fatal bleeding, including intracranial hemorrhage. Notably, there was not an increase in fatal bleeding. However, after this, the FDA had some concerns for missing data, and the request for added labeling for the use of rivaroxaban in ACS was rejected in 2012, and an appeal was later rejected in March of 2013.
So the evidence so far suggests that maybe DOACs, or at least rivaroxaban, may be a benefit. And so the results of the cardiovascular outcomes for people using anticoagulant strategies, or what is more commonly known as the COMPASS trial, were recently published earlier this year in October in the New England Journal of Medicine. And a link to that study is included with your written commentary. But I'm wondering, for those in our audience who haven't read the paper, can you give us a very brief synopsis of the study design and its major findings?
Sure. So the COMPASS trial was a double-blind, double-dummy, randomized controlled trial designed to evaluate whether rivaroxaban alone or in combination with aspirin would be more effective than aspirin alone in the secondary prevention of cardiovascular events. It was conducted in 602 centers in 33 countries and enrolled almost 27,500 patients with a history of stable coronary artery disease and or peripheral artery disease. And at randomization, patients were divided into groups of rivaroxaban 2.5 milligrams twice daily in addition to aspirin 100 milligrams daily, or rivaroxaban 5 milligrams twice daily, or aspirin 100 milligrams daily. Patients in this trial were also randomized to pantoprazole use versus placebo. However, the arm of this study is still ongoing, so we do not know the results. The primary outcome of the trial was a composite of cardiovascular death, stroke, or MI, which was statistically significant for rivaroxaban plus aspirin when compared to aspirin alone. All of the secondary outcomes were also statistically significant for rivaroxaban plus aspirin versus aspirin monotherapy. The main safety outcome was major bleeding. Major bleeding occurred in more patients in the rivaroxaban plus aspirin group compared to the aspirin monotherapy group, and most of the excess bleeding in the rivaroxaban plus aspirin group occurred in the GI tract. With all of the efficacy endpoints being statistically significant, the authors ultimately concluded that the risk of the primary efficacy endpoint in patients with stable atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease was lower with rivaroxaban plus aspirin versus aspirin monotherapy.
So, Joy, tell us a little bit about what you believe to be the key strengths and limitations of the COMPASS study. Are there any major sources of bias, confounders, or other threats to the internal validity of the study?
Well, strengths certainly include a large patient population spanning many centers. Additionally, they utilize a double dummy design to ensure appropriate blinding. As authors were evaluating multiple hypotheses, the statistical design did include a multiplicity adjustment, which would also be considered a strength. I also would note that the COMPASS trial builds upon previous research regarding rivaroxaban use as a secondary prevention strategy. In particular, with the mean treatment and follow-up period of 23 months versus the average of 13 months in the ATLAS trial, giving us additional information on a duration of benefit. And certainly the inclusion of patients with PAD in the COMPASS trial provides an important contribution to the field of thrombocardiology. Another potential strength is the modified ISTH criteria for major bleeding, which appears to be a more conservative measure as it included patients with any bleeding leading to hospitalization, thus capturing more bleeding events. However, if you dig further into the study protocol, only the most severe bleeding event was considered if patients had multiple major bleeding events over the course of the study. And the adjudication of fatal bleeding was left to individual investigators at over 600 centers, which may confound interpretation of the results. Also, in regards to bleeding, it's unknown how the ongoing analysis for randomization to PPI therapy will impact this bleeding risk. And positive results showing modification of bleeding risk may have significant implications for the impact of the COMPASS trial on secondary prevention strategies. There are a few other limitations to be considered. Supplemental data indicates about 8% of patients were excluded after the run-in period due to failure to adhere or tolerate, which does raise some risk of selection bias. The early termination of the trial could have increased risk that the treatment effect size was overestimated. And lastly, although the use of the net clinical benefit outcome did indicate an overall 1.2% absolute risk reduction in events, there is the potential that the composite endpoint, including 3 ischemic events and 2 bleeding events, could have favored the active group.
So, Sean, should the results of the COMPASS trial change practice? Do you think these findings will or should change guidelines? And would you recommend using this combination of rivaroxaban plus aspirin in a case like KW?
You know, Stuart, it seems like I got the hardest question, because when we look at any study, we always want to know, how is it going to impact my practice? COMPASS is unique in that it was conducted in a population with stable cardiovascular disease versus a population post-ACS, and that this trial has shown reductions in stroke and in cardiovascular and total mortality. It's encouraging, though, when we read this trial, that COMPASS did seem to verify the results of ATLAS. The challenge moving forward will be, how do we incorporate this data in all patients with stable cardiovascular disease? So when we look at this, what preventative therapies should take precedence? What order should these be applied? We've always known the overall challenge with implementation of chronic antithrombotic therapies is weighing the benefit of prevention versus the risk of bleeding, and this trial is no different. We saw a meaningful reduction in ischemic events, but there's always going to be a trade-off of bleeding when we look at this. Specifically, development of tools that are analogous to the HAZBLET that quantify bleeding risk or estimate risk to be created to help stratify patients. High-risk patients like those with PAD may be great candidates for this therapy with dual therapy. So to me, the question when we look at any trial for translation into our practice is, that would I do it in my family member? So if it was my dad and he had PAD and he met the inclusion criteria for COMPASS, I would consider this. But in someone with a first event, if his hypertension is not controlled, if his lipids are not maximized, I probably wouldn't go to that as my first line.
So I want to throw a little wrinkle into the case, Joy. Would your recommendation be any different if I told you that KW had a second MI 2 years ago, and rather than an impaired fasting glucose, that this patient actually had diabetes, which was well controlled on metformin and canagliflozin?
Well, I do think that a recurrent ischemic event and an overt diagnosis of diabetes would certainly implicate a stronger consideration for the rivaroxaban plus aspirin. The key would be shared decision-making and discussing the bleeding potential in the setting of what appears to be benefit with the patient, especially addressing the increased risk of bleeding in the GI tract. And for some patients and providers, that may be an acceptable risk if the cardiovascular risk factors are felt to outweigh that. But again, shared decision-making would be important, as well as optimization of other established pharmacologic secondary prevention strategies, transitioning to high-intensity statin and considering beta blocker therapy along with those therapeutic lifestyle changes.
Candace, Joy, Sean, I want to thank you all for joining us today to discuss the use of rivaroxaban plus aspirin for patients with stable coronary artery disease as well as peripheral arterial disease, and how this might change our upcoming guidelines is anyone's guess. I think the evidence suggests there's a benefit here, but is it a universal benefit? And this is such a large population of patients. Can we afford this particular treatment option for all of these patients? I think these are many questions that still need to be answered. Well, tell us what you think. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.